Luke chapter 5, verse 36. And he was also telling them a parable. Luke 5:36. No one tears a piece from a new garment and puts it on an old garment. Otherwise, he'll tear both the new, and the piece from the new will not match the old. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the new wine will burst the skins, and it will be spilled out, and their skins will be ruined. But the new wine must be put into fresh wineskins. And no one, after drinking the old wine, wishes for new, for he says the old is good enough. Now, the setting here is Levi, or Matthew, has been sitting in his tax office, doing paperwork, going over 1040 forms, auditing business, whatever he was doing. And Jesus came by and told him, follow me. And so Levi, or Matthew, got up and he followed Jesus. Now, he's excited about his ability to follow Jesus Christ. He's excited about the kingdom that Jesus is preaching. Remember, the message is repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And so he'd like to present Jesus to all his tax gatherer buddies. And so he does. He throws a big party. And he has Jesus come on over. And, of course, Jesus' other disciples are obviously invited. And tax gatherers. And, of course, in a party that large, then some Pharisees and scribes get to get in. Now, everywhere Jesus went, he had his complain section. I mean, they were there. They were looking. He was doing something positive. They're going to tear him down. You know, he's making them look bad. He's creating a following. He hasn't come through any of their schools. He hasn't worked with their good old boys club. You know, he's a separate operation. And so he is to be opposed, assigned to be opposed. And so what the Pharisees do is they start working on his disciples. See, they're not working directly. They start working on the disciples. Said, how come your teacher eats with these tax gatherers? How come he's eating with these sinners? See, because, of course, no good Jewish rabbi, he'd associate with somebody as low as sinners. And so they're starting to try to perform a little separation operation. You know, they're trying to undercut Jesus from underneath by creating these seeds of doubt in the disciples' minds. See, that's how it works. And so Jesus explains to them, he says, look, it's not those who are healthy who need a physician. It's the sick guys that need doctors. So, implication is, well, he is the great physician who can heal. And then some of the disciples of John the Immerser, they actually have some questions. It's, so how come we and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples aren't fasting? And Jesus comes back and he says, well, look it. He said, when we got a bridegroom here and a wedding's about to take place, so you don't have the fasting going on. It's a time of joy. It's a time of feasting. So he said, we're not fasting now. I said, but they'll be fasting later down the road. Well, the bridegroom will be taken away from them, he said. He said, then they're going to fast. Of course, he's looking to the time of his crucifixion. But he uses that then to set the stage for the passage that we read about a new garment and the old garment. The new wineskins, the new wine, the old wineskins. Okay. Now, what he's talking about is he's talking about the new covenant as contrasted to the old covenant. He's talking about the kingdom as contrasted to Israel. He's talking about faith versus law. He knows what he's doing. It's been a plan that he's had in motion from before the foundation of the world. And so he's trying to bring it to their attention this way. Now, for example, when Ken was talking about Eastern philosophy, I mean, all these systems have a worldview. There is a philosophy, if that's the terminology that you want to use. So you take a New Age or any sort of Eastern thought, you know, their worldview is that there is no sin. You know, I mean, not that you'd specifically define as sin. Everything turns real mushy on them. I mean, these are the same guys that every 12 years at the big feast of Kumbh Mela, And they gather next to the Ganges River, and at some point about 30 million of them break through to go wash the sin from their body in the Ganges River. And, you know, of course, they always trample a few policemen trying to keep order at the time, you know, kill them, but a peaceful demonstration. But see, when you start to try to define sin, it's not, you can't say anything definite as sin because it, you know, it all gets real fuzzy in there. You can tell that the ancient Hindus, the ancient peoples from the Tower of Babel, they rejected God. The Apostle Paul said they refused to have God in their knowledge any longer. Because they refused to have God in their knowledge any longer, then God gave them over to a depraved mind. And what they had to do in order to reject God, what they had to do in order to, you know, cut God out of the picture, they had to say there's no truth. To say that there's nothing you can get your handle on. And that, you know, it's what you feel on the inside. Our modern civilization is running exactly the same route and for exactly the same reasons. But the system of law that governed Israel is also a philosophy. It has a worldview. Now, the thing about the law was it was given by God. And in the words of the Apostle Paul, the law is holy and righteous and good. There's nothing wrong with the law. There's nothing wrong with the commandments. You know, it's still right to honor your father and your mother. You know, it's the first commandment with a promise. See that it may be well with you. That's great. It's still, you shall not commit murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not covet. Those things are all good. The problem is they don't work. They don't work. You know, if you have a 2-year-old with you and you tell them to stand on the blue carpet back there and you don't want to see their feet on the tan carpet, and you turn around and about 5 minutes later there'll be two little tennis shoes or two clogs or whatever. It's about 4 inches over the line, checking to see if you're going to enforce that. See, you told them, they wouldn't have thought about it otherwise, except you said, now look it, don't cross this line. Now a line that they wouldn't have paid any attention to, now all of a sudden it occupies a big spot in their mind. Now, Apostle Paul put it this way, he said, now look it, he said, I would not have known about coveting, except the law said, you shall not covet. And so the law that you shall not covet, he said, produced in me coveting of every kind. So he wouldn't have thought about it, except the law brought it to his attention. And now that's his focus. Now, that's why the Apostle Peter said that the law was a yoke which neither our fathers nor we can bear. See, the law, a system of law, doesn't work. But the system of law is necessary in order to produce the faith of the New Testament. Without the sacrifices, without the shadows, without the principles, you can't have the covenant or the testament of Jesus Christ. Now, at the time that Jesus speaks here in Luke chapter 5, the old covenant, the Old Testament law, is still in effect. The Old Testament law stays in effect until Jesus dies, according to Hebrews chapter 9, verses 16 and 17. So, Jesus lived and died under the Old Testament law. In fact, he kept it perfectly. That's why he is the one who is fitted to be the sacrifice for all of mankind's sin. Is because of his keeping the law perfectly. But he is anticipating the coming of the new covenant. And so the new covenant then is the new garment. And he said, now you don't take a new garment and put it on the old one. So you got an old garment. Like some of my shirts, you know. I mean, Lana keeps trying to get rid of my shirts, and so I like that one. Well, yeah, but you know, it's only going to take one scratch, and that thing is going to disappear. So he takes one of my old shirts. You know, it's gone through how many washings, and you know how many armpitting out sessions, and all the things that go with that, and gets a tear in it. Now you're going to take a new piece of garment, and you're going to put that on that old shirt. And then throw it in the washer. You know, what's going to happen, of course, that just, you know, is that the new piece shrinks just a little bit. and especially in the old times how it used to, and then just tear that shirt. You know, it would have been a waste of both the garment and the waste of the piece to patch the tear. So it wouldn't work. So some of these things I think we lose sight of a little bit. I know when I was a kid, my mother taught us to darn socks. I don't know if Sherry remembers, you know, but we had to take our socks and we had to do these little cross stitches in them, you know, to fill in the holes. So, because, you know, socks were too expensive. And so we got holes in our socks. You just didn't throw them away. You know, you had to darn them and, you know, fill in those holes and make them last longer. You know, when we kind of live in a throwaway society, so sometimes you get an old garment and it's, you know, that shirt is just wearing out. You just toss it and, you know, get a new one, run off the big looms in Red China or something like that, and you're good to go. But that's Jesus' point. So you don't try to do that. It's not going to work. He said you try to take the Old Testament law and you try to take the New Testament and stitch it on to the Old Testament law, it is not going to work. See, they're two separate things. Same way, he talked about the wine and the wineskins. The other day, Lana sent some grapes with me. And I didn't realize that the grapes were in the cooler. And then, I don't know, I was fumbling around or something, and I knocked my lunch cooler. I eat more meals in my car than I do at home, so... You know, so I have this cooler with me, and this time of year she'll freeze some ice and, you know, put it in there, and that way it kind of keeps things cold. Well, I fumbled around and I knocked these grapes out of the cooler and didn't know it, and then they sat in the car a couple days with, you know, and then somehow the grapes got back in the cooler, and so. I'm on the way to Great Falls, and I open up this plastic sack of grapes, and I buy one of these things, and I said, "Wow, you know, sometimes you're someplace where you know people serve a special type of dessert or something like that, and they've kind of fermented something, and it kind of gives it that special flavor. Well, that's what these grapes tasted like. It's like, oh wow, and so." I waited till the car behind me was far enough away and no other cars were coming the other direction, and then I threw the biologically degradable stuff out the window. And but you know, that's what grape juice naturally does. I mean, so what they would do, of course, they'd have these wine skins made out of a goat skin, basically, and so you know you kill the goat and eat everything off the goat and. And then part of it, the leather, you make into a wineskin. And then you poured the grape juice in there. And what happened is because the skin was fresh, it stretched a little bit while the wine was actually fermenting inside the goat skin. And, you know, then you could have that with you. And you could, you know, have your 2% alcohol or whatever that was with you and you know, drink some when you needed it. Okay. Well, what if you had a wineskin, you know, now it's a little bit musty, it's already been stretched out, and you decide you're going to save money, I mean, you didn't want to kill a goat, so you have another goat skin, and so you take and you pour some of this new grape juice inside the old, already stretched out goat skin, what do you think's going to happen? That starts to bubble in there and release carbon dioxide, which is what happens when grape juice ferments, and now all of a sudden that thing's already stretched out. It's already weakened. See, whoop, at some point it just explodes, and then you got your wine all over whatever it happened to explode on. Usually you, and of course that stuff's you know anything from the grape product that's really easy to get out of your clothes. So Jesus said you're not going to do that. See, in other words, he's not going to take this new covenant and he's not going to stick it in the wineskin of the old covenant. It's going to be something totally separate differently. Okay? Now, he anticipated that. Let's turn back to Jeremiah chapter 31, back in the Old Testament here. Jeremiah is prophesying, round figures, 600 years before Christ. And I think we'll begin in verse 29 here, because maybe you'll see the relevance and maybe where Jesus had an idea or two. Jeremiah 31, verse 29. In those days, they will not say again, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. But everyone will die for his own iniquity. Each man who eats the sour grapes, his teeth will be set on edge. Okay. And then behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, with the house of Judah. Not like the covenant which I made with their fathers in the day I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant which they broke, although I was a husband to them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant which I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I'll put my law within them, and on their heart I will write it, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. And they shall not teach again each man his neighbor and each man his brother, saying, know the Lord. For they all shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and their sin I will remember no more. See, now he's making it pretty plain, prophetically, that the new covenant is not going to be like the old covenant. He says the old covenant didn't work. See, that's the problem with it. And there's nothing wrong with the law. The law is righteous and holy and good. So if the law is good, and it doesn't work on people, then where's the problem? Oh, people. So that helps to understand the new approach then that Christianity has. He's not going to take the new covenant and stick it into a setting that's similar to the old covenant. It's not going to be like that. See, the old covenant is a covenant of regulation. Old covenant is a covenant of definite laws. For example, if, under the Old Testament, if my wife makes a vow, or she makes an oath to the Lord, and I happen to overhear that vow that she makes to the Lord. That is, if you know, if her son comes home, her four children come home safely from youth camp, then she will dedicate the green Impala to the Lord. Now. If I happen to overhear that vow, then I've got 24 hours to disannul that. See, but if I don't disannul that, then that green Impala, I mean, it's gone. You know, it's out of there. Now it's a good thing, Jerry, that we still got the green Impala, because that's what's going to Great Falls today. But see, there's some very very definite, you know, regulations about all kinds of things. You're cooking in your house, and you got a brand new, really nice earthen vessel that your favorite grandmother gave you. And I mean, this is just the thing for kneading your bread in, and you've been looking forward to that. And you just get ready, and a mouse just comes and runs through. That nice vessel, you know what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to smash that thing. Yeah, earthen vessel, got to be smashed, see, because something unclean ran through it. See, some very, very specific regulations there. Now, see, life, in one manner of speaking, is easier where you're strictly regulated because you don't have to think about it. See, that's the condition of a slave. See, a slave doesn't have the opportunity to really think about things. And that's why, you know, places like Hitler's Germany, see, they basically reduced the people to the level of slaves. They couldn't really think about things, at least freely. Stalin's Russia. Who's China? Bush's America. See, they're all in the process of reducing people to the level of slaves. See, I mean, did you see the deal the other day where now they're going to start regulating fishing on the ocean? If you want to go recreational fish off the Oregon coast, you got to go get a permit. Do that? Anybody else see that besides me? I think, wow. I mean, you got to get permission for everything. But see, that, I mean, that's what happens. They reduce people to slaves. Slaves can't think. See, everything is regulated for you. Just, it's a checklist. That's what a system of law does. Whether it's a religious law or a set of political laws, that's eventually what happens. It becomes a system where you don't have liberty to think. You don't have the liberty to pursue. You don't have the liberty to try. You think about it. If you don't have the possibility of failing, you don't have the possibility of succeeding either. And so a system of law is like that. Now, Paul, the Apostle Paul and Peter and John and all the New Testament writers, they're really clear that the New Covenant is a covenant of freedom. The New Covenant is a covenant of personal responsibility. Whereas the Old Covenant was not. It was a national covenant of law and lack of personal responsibility. Herb asked a question this morning in class. Turn to Matthew chapter 23. Maybe it was Diamond. I don't remember. The question was a good one. It says, why? Why was John the Immerser's immersion for remission of sins? Why was that so important, and why was that so accepted, and what did that do? See, why did that spread like wildfire throughout the nation Israel? Well, Matthew chapter 23, and verse 2, Jesus said, "The scribes and the Pharisees have seated themselves in the chair of Moses. Therefore, all that they tell you, do and observe, but do not do according to their deeds, for they say things and do not do them. And they tie up heavy loads and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are unwilling to move them with so much as a finger." See, the result was the people, in the words of Jesus, were distressed and downcast like sheep without a shepherd. Because they're oppressed. See, they made all these regulations just to make sure. See, that nobody sinned. The idea that the Pharisees had was, here is the law, so we're going to make a set of laws around that so that if people break our laws, at least they don't break the laws of God. Example. According to the Old Testament law, if you scored somebody, the maximum you could give was 40 stripes. So the Jews always gave 39. Less in case they miscounted. See, so they had a regulation there in addition to the 40. No, it's going to be one less than that, just so you don't break the 40 that's there. That's why Paul said, was it five times he received 39 stripes? See, that was the Jewish way of doing things. And all kinds of things like that. And so the result, the people were tremendously oppressed by all these regulations. They couldn't move, see, without being regulated in some fashion or another. Like, say, if a person doesn't want to think, if a person wants to be a slave, then that is a system that's acceptable to him. One of the big dangers you have when you're working with guys that have been in prison, you know, Deer Lodge, for example, more than once, is they're in danger of becoming institutionalized. See, they like it after a while. You know, they like being told when to get up. They like being told when to have their meals. They like being told when they're going to do their exercises or their, you know, their little projects. They like being told when they're going to go to bed. See, everything is regulated for them. And when they come out, and some of the guys we've even worked with in this congregation, you know, being in and out of prison. I was talking with one of them the other day. He said, I'm really afraid. He said, I think I've become institutionalized. He said, I think I'm almost to the point where I do things now to get back in prison. Because it's easier. See, it doesn't require the personal responsibility. If we turn to Galatians chapter 5, see what John's immersion did. See, it gave people a fresh start under the law. The immersion just cleaned out the past, any mistakes that they had made, in not being able to handle all the regulations laid down by the law and by the enforcers. And so it gave him a fresh start, a new beginning. See, and that's one of the things that God was using in preparation for Christianity, for immersion in Acts chapter 2. In Galatians chapter 5, see, Paul is trying to deal with this issue of law versus faith. In verse 1, Galatians 5:1, he says, "It's for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm. Do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery." See, now, Peter used the word yoke. Now, Paul's going to use the word yoke. See, to be free requires responsibility. We have a picture of that in America's history. You know, as they set themselves free from the shackles of what they considered to be British tyranny and charged off into the new, is what they often called the grand experiment. Okay, there wasn't any government there to bail you out. See, according to the Constitution, developed in 1787, ratified, you know, eventually by 1792. But as there's no government there to bail you out. I mean, if you're Davy Crockett and you're shipping your goods down the Ohio, down the Tennessee, down the Ohio, down the Mississippi to New Orleans, and that barge capsizes and your work for the last year just goes to the bottom of, I mean, how'd you like to be trying to fetch something out of the Mississippi right about now? I mean, not going to happen, see. So what program was going to bail Davy Crockett out? Well, it wasn't any. Now, what program is going to bail all the guys flooded out by the Mississippi now? Yeah. See, I mean, what happens? See, what happened? At some point, see, the people were free. They're free to fail, free to succeed. And they took those responsibilities themselves. See, now nobody, the idea is nobody's allowed to fail. Nobody's allowed to, quote, have hardship. You know, it's, you know, the politicians all got to look like they're doing something. So, you know, they're quick to use these as mugshot photo opportunities. And I think mug is right. So it looked like they're doing something, and they care less about the Constitution. So what once was, see, a people who are fiercely independent, fiercely stand on their own two feet, make their own decisions, didn't have to ask permission. See, who could go out and carve their existence out of the frontier, if that's what they decided to do. And, you know, either succeeded in fending off the Indians, or this Indians succeeded in fending off them off, however that worked. That's how it was. See, they're free, but in order to be free, they also had to be responsible. Wasn't going to be anybody there bailing them out. That's an illustration of Christianity. When you become a Christian, see, you leave any of the old life behind, and you are now responsible to stand as a mature individual before God and to voluntarily carry out the things that He wants you to, the principles of the New Testament. The New Testament is not a testament of law, it's a testament of principle. So you can't make enough law. Can you imagine? Okay, look at how thick the Old Testament is. And that was to govern a small nation. What kind of book are you going to have to go to all the nations? You can't have one. So what you have is you have a testament of principle that says, look, I'm counting on you guys being old enough and mature enough that you can go out here and you can figure out how to apply the principle in the specific situation that you live in. I believe you can do that. See, that's freedom. Freedom and responsibility go together. Irresponsibility and slavery go together. That's how it works. And so the Old Testament was a system of slaves. You don't think so? All right, Galatians chapter 4. Galatians chapter 4, verse 1. He said, now I say, as long as the heir is a child, using this as an illustration, he does not differ at all from a slave, although he's owner of everything. But he's under guardians and managers until the date set by the father. Okay, we recognize that your 14-year-old kid is still a slave. You know, that is, you know, he's going to get permission to go. He's going to get permission to do. And yes, he will be associating with certain people. And yes, he will be home at a certain time. And yes, he will be expected to do what he's told to do, be where he's supposed to be, doing what he's supposed to be doing. And yes, we will be checking. Okay? That's slavery. Now, it's a benign slavery because parents actually do care for their kids a lot more than the government does. And, you know, that's something to keep in mind. And so it's a benign slavery, but it's a slavery nevertheless. But here's the parallel he makes. Verse 3, so also we, while we were children, see, we're held in bondage under the elemental things of the world. One of those elemental things was the Jewish law. Jewish law. See, but when the fullness of the time came, see, this is what Jesus was talking about in the wine and the wineskins and the patch on the garment. God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, in order that he might redeem those who are under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. See, the system of law is a system of failure. God isn't going to want to try to take a system of responsibility and stick it inside a system of slavery. He's not going to do that. So there's going to be a break, a rapid as possible break from the system of law to the system of faith. Okay. Well, I don't know if this is really relevant to my life. You know, I mean, you ought to see the state of my bankruptcy right now. And then you're over here talking about law and faith. I mean, you know, it'd be really nice to get something relevant here. You know, something that a person could get a hold of. Well, if you'll take the time to start understanding the difference between law and faith, it has to do with every aspect of your life. It has to do with how you approach things. See, the system of law is a worldview. It's a different worldview than the New Age, Hinduism, Eastern thought. But it is a system of thought. The system of faith has also got a worldview. And it's a view that's different than the law in a lot of respects. In terms of how you personally relate to God, in terms of how you personally relate to each other, in terms of how you go about edifying or building people up, how you go about strengthening things. See, a system of law is a system of death. See, it kills. The law kills. The letter kills. Paul says that over and over. Letter kills. What is it that gives life? See, the Spirit is what gives life. And so, when Jesus is talking here in Luke chapter 5 about the wineskins and about the garments, you know, it's a very important point that he's making with regard to the kingdom. Let's go back to Luke chapter 5. It's your problem. See, Luke 5:38, he says, the new wine must be put into fresh wineskins. Okay? So, here's the problem. It said, no one, after the drinking wine, the drinking the old wine, wishes for the new, for he said the old's good enough. See, the problem is when a person gets used to a system of slavery, very hard to get over to a system of freedom and responsibility. See, there's tremendous resistance in New Testament times on the part of the Jews to the New Covenant. Stephen got into trouble, according to the rumors that was around, for saying that Jesus would destroy the temple and alter the customs and laws. Well, Jesus did say that, so why is Stephen in trouble over it? Well, see, he's appealing to the fleshly mindedness of the Jews who didn't want change. See, they wanted it the way it was. See, a system of slavery at some point is a system of comfort. You know where the boundaries are. You're told where the boundaries are. You are told you will not get off the blue carpet. So you know where that boundary is. See, a system of responsibility and maturity doesn't have boundaries. It doesn't have upper limits on it. See, it requires ingenuity. It requires creativity. It requires initiative. See, a lot of things. So it's very possible for people to get accustomed to the system of slavery and not want to bridge the gap over to the system of freedom. That's what Jesus is talking about. How serious was it? That's why they killed Jesus to start with. That's how serious. When you start bringing the message of freedom as it's written in the Bible, not a false freedom, not a fake freedom. I mean, the New Age guys, that's what they're offering you, whole freedom. Yeah. Just meditate until your brain turns to mush and you think absolutely about nothing. And that's freedom? That's abject slavery is what that is. See, freedom is when your brain is fully engaged. See, when you know who you are by the grace of God and you know where you're going by His grace and you know by His grace what you can accomplish. See, that's freedom. Is it without challenge? No. Is it without difficulty? No. But it is freedom. So, Jesus died because He preached the message of freedom. Stephen died because he preached the message of freedom. Paul and the others were persecuted and crucified and put to death because they preached the message of freedom. They preached the message of the new wine and the new wineskins. And it cost them. Because those who are oppressors, see, in the physical realm or the spiritual realm, do not want people to be free. Do not want them to be free. And so they will kill the messengers of freedom. You can be absolutely certain of that. Did Jesus know that in his case? Yeah, he did. See, remember verse 35? Luke 5:35, the days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them. Then they will fast in those days. See, he knew, but he also knew that he was going to raise from the dead. And he also knew that he was going to bring the victory message. And he knew that we would be meeting here this day and being enjoying the victory message and willing to take that to other people, to offer them freedom from sin, offer them peace at heart. Offer them the strength of the Holy Spirit. Offer them the opportunity to exercise initiative inside the framework or the principles of the new covenant. See, maybe that's something that you want today. See, you can have it, but you're going to have it on Jesus' terms. See, it's not, you don't write your own ticket on this. It's Jesus' ticket. He's the one that paid the price. So if you believe in His death, in His burial, His resurrection, if you're willing to repent, you know, change your thought processes and move over to the maturity of Christianity, if you're willing to confess that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, if you're willing to be immersed into Him, you come as we stand. Each of us needs to then be conscious of these principles of the new covenant and not try to go back to a system of law. Not to try to frown people into submission. You know, to understand how to edify and how to build and how to come in underneath and strengthen people. See, to use the same principles that God does at producing maturity in us. If we do that, then we can greatly impact, with God's help, the lives of many others and take the spiritual revolution another notch into more people.